welcome each one to our service. I can also say it was good to be here this morning already, and different ones that have shared the devotional, and I thought it's going to go good with the what I've chosen to speak about for the message, which has to do with wisdom. Wisdom. So what is it? What is wisdom? Where do you get it? And I had to think, as Joe mentioned, about being a salt, being a light to the world out there. We can see that there is certainly a need for wisdom. And not just any wisdom, not man's wisdom, but it needs to be godly wisdom. If I'd like to hear from you, just what comes to your mind if you were to be out and about on the street or whatever. Someone asks you, what is wisdom? What would you say? What would you tell that person? What is wisdom? Okay, experience. Okay, thank you. Anyone else?
Wisdom from above.
Okay, wisdom from above. Okay. Anyone else have anything to add to that?
The Bible is full of wisdom.
Okay, the Bible is full of wisdom, right? Yes, it is. Anyone else? So, yes, so we have experience, we have the Bible, it comes from above, all of those things. It's actually a little bit hard to define wisdom. You know, if you look at just experience alone, yeah, there's plenty of people out there with experience, you might say, and you would be like scratching your head, why did that person do that? But yeah, and it can go in other, but when you combine experience, combine that with the scripture coming from above, you've got a man that is a man or woman that is worth a lot. And so the other question is, where do you get it? And we heard from Steve, from above. What are some common synonyms of wisdom? One is common sense. That seems to be lacking these days, including my own life. Sometimes I wonder where was the common sense in that moment. Sound judgment. The ability to reach intelligent conclusions. Wisdom implies sense and judgment far above average. And so it's like wisdom. In that next level. Where does it come from? And I was impressed when I looked at wisdom, where it's first used in the Bible, where the word is first comes into play, is in Exodus, Exodus chapter 28. And in that verse it says, "And thou shalt speak unto all that are wise-hearted, whom I have filled with the spirit of wisdom, that they may make Aaron's garments to consecrate him, that he may minister unto me in the priest's office." Again, so the first place it is mentioned, God is saying, whom I have filled with the spirit of wisdom. So that is where it came. In that case, it came from God. If we look at the wisdom in the Hebrew, it speaks of chachma, the skill of an artificer, or a skilled craftsman, or inventor, comprehends various learnings, ascribed to a ruler, and in a greater or eminent sense to God himself. And so what you look at is, when you look at wisdom, you know, and you look at someone that is skilled, a person that is good at something, and then you keep going up the ladder, comprehends various learnings, and then is ascribed to a ruler or a king, then ultimately you land up to God himself. And that ultimately is where it comes from. And so it trickles down to his people. And if you go to the next place that it's mentioned in the Bible, in the Old Testament, it says, "And I have filled him with the Spirit of God in wisdom and in understanding, in knowledge, and in all manner of workmanship." Again, coming from God himself. Go to the next one. It says, "And I, behold, have given unto him Aholiab, the son of Ahishamach, of the tribe of Dan, and in the hearts of all that are wise-hearted, I have put wisdom, that they may make all that I have commanded thee." The other thing that's interesting, and maybe more so for you ladies, wisdom in the Bible is a... it uses the feminine pronoun. So it's referred to as a she, as a her. And so I think probably you ladies have a much better or bigger dose of it than us as men do, perhaps. If you go to Proverbs verse 20, it says, "Wisdom crieth without, she uttereth her voice in the streets." Proverbs 7:4, "Say unto wisdom, thou art my sister, and call understanding thy kinswoman." Proverbs 8:1, "Doth not wisdom cry, and understanding put forth her voice? Wisdom hath builded her house, she hath hewn out her seven pillars." And so, how do we know when someone has wisdom? Is there a benchmark, or is there something that we can go to determine when someone has wisdom? It used to be you could, well, this is maybe human understanding, is can we go by the size of someone's library, by the amount of books that he has? During the War of 1812 between England and America, yes, the British, they actually invaded Washington, D.C. and burned much of it to the ground, including the Library of Congress with its 30,000 books. After the war was over, Congress purchased Thomas Jefferson's personal library, which was 6,487 books, to restart that library. Here was a man that had almost 6,500 books. Now, we could think he had a lot of wisdom. He had a lot of books, right? but this pales in comparison to that of Abdul Qasim Ismail in the 10th century. He was the grand vizier of Persia. And now get this. He was very wealthy and an educated man. And he had a library that consisted of 117,000 volumes. More likely scrolls rather than the books that we think of today. But he had 117,000 volumes. And he loved his books so much that even when he traveled, and he traveled a lot, he never parted with them. He took his whole library with him. That's how much those books meant to him. Well, how did he do that? If you have 400 camels, you can do it. But here's what's interesting. About 400 camels, which were loaded with his library, these camels were trained to walk in alphabetical order, so that he could obtain the volume he wished at a moment's notice. He could go right to the certain camel that he wanted and, you know, find what he was looking for. So certainly people, I think a lot of wise people do have books, if you will. Down through the ages, knowledge and wisdom have been highly prized by civilized men. And the mark of wisdom for many people has been the number of books that they possessed. However, we have a man in the Bible who was the wisest man in the Bible. Okay? Any one of our children, probably. Who was the wisest man in the Bible? Any of you? Okay, go ahead. Yes, Solomon. Okay, how many books did Solomon have? did he have a library the size of this other person, Ishmael? In fact, Solomon's wisdom wasn't measured by the number of books he owned, but much rather it was measured by how much he wrote and how much he knew. And so Solomon himself wrote the books. In 1 Kings chapter 4, it says he spoke 3,000 proverbs, and his songs numbered 1,005. He spoke about plant life from the cedar of Lebanon to the hyssop that grows out of walls. He also spoke about animals, birds, reptiles, and fish. And from all nations, people came to listen to Solomon's wisdom, and sent by all the kings of the world who had heard of his wisdom. And you can read about that in 1 Kings chapter 4. I like to read 1 Kings chapter 3, where this sort of took place. It says, in Gibeon, the Lord appeared to Solomon in a dream by night, and God asked, "What shall I give thee?" I mean, what would that be like to have God ask us? It's like a blank check, right? What do you say to someone that would tell you, let's say a rich man would ask you, or a rich wise man would ask you, "I'll give you whatever you want." What would you tell him? You know, Solomon could have said, "Well, I need national security. I need an army that's able to fight," or "I need, you know," you fill in the blank. He could have asked for a lot of other things that could have brought maybe instant stability, or, you know, it would have brought about a certain level of security to him, to solidify his kingdom. He could have asked for any number of things. In verse 6 it says, "And Solomon said, Thou hast showed unto thy servant David, my father, great mercy, according as he walked before thee in truth and in righteousness and in uprightness of heart with thee, and thou hast kept for him his great kindness. Thou hast given him a son to sit on his throne as it is this day. And now, O Lord my God, thou hast made thy servant king instead of David my father. I am but a little child. I know not how to go out or to come in." So first of all, look at how he sees himself as a little child, inadequate, insufficient as a leader. Look at that childlike naivety that steers his petition. Solomon could ask for what he wished, and how big was his ask? It was for wisdom. In verse 8, "And thy servant is in the midst of thy people, which thou hast chosen, a great people that cannot be numbered nor counted for multitude. Give therefore thy servant an understanding heart to judge thy people, that I may discern between good and bad, for who is able to judge this so great a people?" And the speech pleased the Lord that Solomon had asked this thing. And God said unto him, "Because thou hast asked this thing, and have not asked for thyself long life, neither hast asked riches for thyself, nor has asked the life of thine enemies, but has asked for thyself understanding to discern judgment. Behold, I have done according to thy works. Lo, I have given thee a wise and an understanding heart, so that there was none like thee before thee, neither after thee shall any arise like unto thee. And I also have given thee that which thou hast not asked for." Now get this. So Solomon asked for wisdom, but now God is saying, "I have also given thee that which thou hast not asked for, both riches and honor, so that there shall not be any among the kings like unto thee all thy days. And if thou wilt walk in my ways to keep my statutes and my commandments, as thy father David did, then will I lengthen thy days." And Solomon awoke, and behold, it was a dream. And he came to Jerusalem and stood before the ark of the covenant of the Lord and offered up burnt offerings and offered peace offerings and made a feast to all his servants. And what kind of a dream would that be to wake up from? You know, a lot of times, and you know, God was in this dream, Solomon too. You know, we've all had these weird dreams, you know, where, you know, weird things happen or whatever. But this was a dream that, you know, Solomon, and I think that's how he was in real life as well, not just, you know, in a dream. Sometimes in a dream, we become maybe a different person. But in this case, God came to Solomon, and Solomon, this is who he was. And, you know, God went above and beyond what Solomon even asked for. And so as we look at Proverbs, so as God gave him this wisdom, okay, what does Proverbs now, what does Solomon now do with the wisdom that God has given him? Just read a couple verses here. What is the value of wisdom? In Proverbs chapter 3, verse 13, it says, "Blessed is the one who finds wisdom and the one who gets understanding." And Solomon would know what he's talking about here, by the way. In verse 14, "For the gain of her is better than the gain from silver, and her profit better than gold." It's worth a lot. You could even say better than a tank of gas these days, the price of fuel and all. But in monetary value, it's better than silver and the value even that of gold. And then he says, "She is more precious than jewels or rubies, and nothing you desire can compare with her." And so again, something extremely expensive. And so if you have wisdom, you know, I don't care if you're Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, Bill Gates, all of those people, they don't have nothing on a person that is endowed with wisdom from above if they don't have godly wisdom. They can have all the money in the world, but even Solomon, and Solomon, by the way, could say this because he was the richest man in the world, but he could say that wisdom is worth far more than all of those things. In verse 16, "Long life is in her right hand, in her left hand are riches and honor. Her ways are ways of pleasantness, and all her paths are peace. She's a tree of life to those who lay hold of her, and those who hold her fast are called blessed. The Lord by wisdom founded the earth, and by understanding he established the heavens." And so we sometimes talk about how did God do this? It says, by wisdom. "By his knowledge, the deeps broke open and the clouds dropped down the dew. My son, do not lose sight of these. Keep sound wisdom and discretion, for they will be life for your soul and adornment for your neck. And then you will walk on your way securely and your foot will not stumble. If you lie down, you will not be afraid. When you lie down, your sleep will be sweet. Do not be afraid of the sudden terror or of the ruin of the wicked when it comes. For the Lord will be your confidence and will keep your foot from being caught. Do not withhold good from those to whom it is due when it is in your power to do it." A challenge in my own life. How many times do we withhold good from someone when it is in our power to do it? "Do not say to your neighbor, 'Go and come again tomorrow and I will give it,' when you have it with you." What Solomon is saying, if you have the means to do something good now, do it. You know, I tend to procrastinate. I tend to not say anything or not do anything. "Do not plan evil against your neighbor who dwells trustingly beside you. Do not contend with a man for no reason when he has done you no harm. Do not envy a man of violence, and do not choose any of his ways. For the devious person is an abomination to the Lord, but the upright are in his confidence. The Lord's curse is on the house of the wicked, but he blesses the dwelling of the righteous. Toward the scorners he is scornful, but to the humble he gives favor. The wise will inherit honor, but fools get disgrace." Look at all the wisdom that is packed into these verses. And so how do we apply wisdom in a practical sense in terms of how do we think? Okay, here's a little bit of trivia for you. A little math question, if you will. A bat and a ball together costs $1.10. Okay? A bat and a ball together costs $1.10. The bat costs $1 more than the ball. What was the price of the ball? So the bat and the ball together cost $1.10. The bat costs $1 more than the ball. What was the price of the ball? Yes, Brandon? $1.05. What was the price of the ball? If the ball is 10 cents and you add $1, you get $1.10. Okay. Thank you. So the price of the ball is 5 cents. How many think it's 5 cents versus 10 cents? If it's 10 cents, you add $1 more and you get $1.10. The price of the price together was $1.10 and you add $1. Does anyone think the price of the ball is 10 cents and you add $1, you get $1.10? Okay, disagree. Okay, I think we've got a lot of wisdom here. And so what I tried to do is I tried to bring in human reasoning and human understanding. Yeah, thanks, Brandon. None of you really bid on it. Yeah, the price of the ball is actually 5 cents. It's not 10 cents. So if you take the ball at 5 cents and you add $1 more, the price of the bat is $1.05. And then you get to adding those two together, you get $1.10. But many times when we get a situation in life, we tend to short circuit the situation. We want to go right to the solution and do a quick fix, if you will. But sometimes we have to sit back and say, what is he actually saying? And we have to apply some wisdom to the solution. And then we get the right answer. Or here's another one. And you may have heard this one before. A small lily pad on a lake or a pond, it doubles in size every day, okay? And by the 20th day, it completely covers the pond. On which day did it cover half of the pond? Anyone? Was it the 10th day or Kenny? Yes, it was the 19th day. Thank you. And again, so we sit back and we analyze it, apply some wisdom, and it was on the 19th day because it doubled in size every day. Okay, well, I'm glad to be in the midst of wisdom this morning, so thank you for that. But the point being, many times we take the approach in life. We rush to answer. We want to go straight to the solution so we can move on. When we're faced with a problem, a situation, we want to rush in there and fix it instead of slowing down and applying wisdom. We slow down and say, what is the wise thing to do in this case? And allow God to speak to us, to speak wisdom. We all want wisdom. So how do we get it? How do we get wisdom? If we go to Proverbs chapter 9, verse 10, it says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the holy is understanding. The fear of the Lord. And so if we don't have the fear of the Lord, can we even really begin to have wisdom? What is the fear of the Lord? Is it being afraid? I think we have all experienced. I have seen a dog one time that had come out of an abusive situation, and you would try to pet the dog and he would always cower down, and you could tell he was scared. And, you know, you just wanted to love on him. You wanted to reach out and pet him, and he would always, you know, he was very scared. He was skittish. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. That's not the fear that he's talking about here. I think even in times for us, That has been our natural response when God is trying to speak to us or say something to us or convict us, and we cower down in fear. But I think the fear of the Lord is something altogether different. In fact, Scripture tells us that nothing can separate us from God's love. And so what is the fear of the Lord? And I think simply what it is when we have such a deep reverence for Him, such a deep reverence for God, we don't cower in fear. But it's to say, we get on our knees and our face, and we say, God, in light of who You are, in light of Your awesome power and sovereignty, in light of everything that You are, we bow down and we honor You. In light of Your goodness, I am nothing. In light of who You are, my righteousness isn't even righteous in light of Your righteousness. I am unworthy, and yet You have chosen to be in a relationship with me. And our only response, as Paul says, is to offer our body a living sacrifice to You. You know, when we see God for who He really is, and we see ourselves for who we really are, we are nothing compared to who God is. And when we approach God and when we are willing to become nothing, that's when God, when we empty of ourselves, that's when God can fill us. But if we're just full of ourselves all the time, there's no room for God to fill us with His wisdom. And we offer our body a living sacrifice to Him. And I think when we go through life with that mindset, God will then impart His wisdom to us. Again, in another place, Psalm 111:10, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and all those who practice it have a good understanding. His praise endures forever. And so we become empty of ourselves. God will then fill us. In James 1:5, it says, if any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God that giveth to all men liberally. He doesn't just trickle it down to us, but he giveth to all men liberally and upbraideth not, and it shall be given to him. And then it says, let him ask in faith, nothing wavering, for he that wavereth is like a wave of the sea driven with the wind and tossed. And I like how Kenneth Wiest says it. Thank you for that link, Mike. But in his, he's a Greek scholar, but the way he says it here is, it says, and if, as the case, any one of you is deficient in wisdom, let him keep on presenting his request in the presence of giving God, who gives to all with simplicity and without reserve, and who does not reproach, and it shall be given him. But let him be presenting his request in a trusting attitude, not in an expression of that hesitation which vacillates, for the person who vacillates is like the surf of the sea driven and tossed by the wind. For let not that individual be supposing that he shall receive anything from the presence of the Lord, a dubious, undecided man, vacillating in all his ways. And vacillating is someone that is always undecided. He can't make up his mind. And that speaks to me, because I can be that way more times than I care to admit. And I like the part it says, abradeth not. God doesn't look at a person that asks for wisdom, has the fear of the Lord, and asks for wisdom and say, well, because of some issues you have here and there, I'm not going to give it. The Bible says God does not do that. Also, another story here I'd like to read. The difference between intelligent and wisdom. There's a story about a favorite course at a university. And the favorite course, it was a survey of the New Testament. And it was a favorite because there was no homework, there was no reading, and no tests before the final. And on the final, for 25 years, the same professor had always presented the same question. And the question was to describe the missionary journeys of Paul. A young man by the name of Meathead, I don't know if he liked meat or whatever, but he was a star on the school's football team. He took the course, and a tutor helped prepare him all semester long for the final exam. When the day of the test came, Meathead was ready. He knew everything about every journey Paul ever took. He knew about Philippi, Thessalonica, Rome, and Tyre. He knew about Timothy and Barnabas and Luke, and he was ready. And when the final exam was passed out, students all over that auditorium were stunned to see a new question. And for the first time in a quarter century, the professor decided to ask a different question. Instead of a question about Paul's missionary journey, there was this question. And the question was this: critique the Sermon on the Mount that was preached by Jesus. And now Joe read the Sermon on the Mount, or at least part of it, this morning. What would you say to that? Critique the Sermon on the Mount that was preached by Jesus, and to still get a passing grade. The shock was felt across the room, and a young man got up, took his blue book, a little book that was designed to hold his essay. He threw it down on the professor's desk, and it was empty. He didn't know how to answer the question. And one by one, all the students left, none of them able to answer the question, except for Meathead. Meathead opened his blue book, and he began to write. He wrote, and he wrote, and he wrote. The professor's assistants came back an hour later, and Meathead was still writing. 2 hours later, and Meathead was going at it. And for a full 3 hours, Meathead filled up his blue book. That afternoon, the professor had two stacks of blue books. On his right, a tall stack of empty blue books, all with the grade of F. On his left one, a single blue book with a big, bold A+ right on top, and it was Meathead's. And so they ask him, "What in the world did you write about?" Ask a classmate. "Read it," said Meathead. And on the first page was the opening sentence. It said, "Who am I to criticize the Sermon on the Mount? Let me tell you about the missionary journeys of Paul." And so we can see that Meathead had discovered wisdom. In fact, you can sense the fear of God in the opening sentence. "Who am I to criticize the teachings of Jesus?" So the question this morning is, do I have the fear of God? Do we have the fear of God? And I think as much as we want wisdom, we want that, and I get that. But first and foremost, do we have the fear of God within us? Dallas Willard once quoted the verse, "To be wise as serpents and innocent as doves," and then asked the question, "What is the wisdom of a serpent?" What would you say? What is the wisdom of a serpent? In fact, Leandra got a text yesterday afternoon, and we were in the house. Jan was down in the cabin. She said, "There's a big snake out in the yard." And just in no time, we were down there, and we found the snake and took care of business. But we wonder, what is the wisdom of a serpent? to which someone said, "Have you ever seen a snake chase someone?" Well, not really. And he said, "The wisdom of the serpent is to wait until someone comes to them." Of course, we are not trying to kill or bite anyone, which is why Jesus adds on being as harmless as doves. And so we have that to counteract us, right? Doves are about as harmless as they get. They are symbols of peace. So when you combine the wisdom of the serpent and the gentleness of the dove, we have found the right approach to evangelism. And then he goes on and says, Frank waited nearly a year before speaking to the people he had come to evangelize in the Philippines. He simply did his work faithfully and kept his mind on things above. In time, the Muslim leaders told the people, go spend time with that man. He knows God. He waited and was gentle, and he also respected the people that cared for them by teaching them how to read. Frank was a man of hope, and from that hope sprang faith and love. So even though we may have wisdom, sometimes the wisdom might be not to really say anything, but let your life speak. Proverbs 4:5 says, "Get wisdom, get understanding, forget it not, neither decline from the words of my mouth." And then he says, "Forsake her not, and she shall preserve thee. Love her, and she shall keep thee. Wisdom is the principal thing, therefore get wisdom, and with all thy getting, get understanding. Exalt her, and she shall promote thee. She shall bring thee to honor when thou dost embrace her. She shall give to thine head an ornament of grace, a crown of glory shall she deliver to thee. Hear, O my son, and receive my sayings, and the years of thy life shall be many. I have taught thee in the way of wisdom. I have led thee in right paths." And so the challenge for us in the times that we are living in, as we navigate these times, and truly we do live in uncertain times, we can see it. We can see it all around us. And so for those of us, those of you fathers, husbands, wives, sisters, ladies, men, women, whoever you are, as we go through these challenging waters and we try to move forward in these uncertain times, what is our big ask from the Lord? What is it that we really want from the Lord? For Solomon, you know, I'm sure life looked big to him in that dream and what he was going through. But what is the big thing that we are wanting from God? We can chase after all these earthly things. You know, we might think if we're a little bit better off financially, or if we had this or that property, you know, we'd feel a lot more secure. But coming back to James 1, "If any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God that giveth to all men liberally." Again, let's remember that as we go through life, God wants us to come to him. He wants to give us what he has, but he does want us to come and ask. I want to thank you all, and at this time, let's bow for a word of prayer.